Okay, I'm a northerner. I don't know if you guessed. I'm a northerner living down south, and that means that each Christmas, I'm going to know where I'm going to be the following Christmas, pretty much. I'll be in a different part of the country. And this year, it was my southern Christmas, and the year before, bizarrely, ended up being a southern Christmas too, out of convenience for my dad and my stepmom. But the year before that, I was up north. I was in Cumbria. Now, I'm fine spending Christmas down south because my mother-in-law, I think she goes for the most loyal person in Waitrose award. And because I'm not buying the food, I just consume it. And I love the food, and I love that she buys it and cooks it. And then my father-in-law, Jeff, well, he's in charge of the drinks. Selection's always very, very good. And so I just kind of embrace it. But if I'm due a year up north, and that, say, for weather reasons is threatened, like the snow a few years ago, I find that really challenging, because I've already been imagining what my Christmas down south or up north is going to be like before I've even got there. And a few years ago, I was due a Christmas up north and the snow came, and it looked like we weren't going to get there. And I was just in absolute bits, because I'd already pulled crackers up north in my head. I'd already had the Boxing Day fridge. I was ready for it, and it was threatened. But I got there, and this year I was down here. And I like spending Christmas with my dad. When my mum died, I bought him a Delia Smith cookbook, and he's really thrived at hosting as a result of good old Delia. He'll say things like, "When you're up in 6 weeks' time, what are you going to want to eat?" I don't know what I'm going to have for my lunch, let alone in 6 weeks' time, but this year I was down south and I was having a sherry in the kitchen with my parents-in-law. I wouldn't usually have a sherry in the kitchen, I usually have it in the lounge. But it was around about midday and I was having a sherry, and it might have been my second one. And Wendy, my mother-in-law, said, "Have you spoken to your dad today?" And I said, "No." She said, "No, no, it's Christmas Day." I said, "No, yeah, no, no." Because this is what will happen. He'll be rushing around this morning, and I don't want to interrupt him when he's doing that. Then he's going to have a cab that picks him up to take him to my stepmom's brother's house. There's going to be loads of people there. His phone will be somewhere else. The grandchildren will be there. Everyone will be there. It'll be manic. And then they'll be eating and drinking and playing games. And at some point during the conversation, someone will say, "Have you spoken to Karen today?" And he'll go, "Apologies. Oh, God, no." And then I'll get a call. And at 3 o'clock, that's exactly what happened. My dad phoned me, "Hiya." I was like, "Hi, did someone remind you I was alive?" So I'll get back to my dad in a minute. But now I'll take you to another Christmas. So my lovely friend Franny lives in Sweden. I spoke about Franny a couple of 7 o'clocks ago. And a few years ago, Graham and I did a flat swap with Franny for Christmas. So he came to our place in Tunbridge Wells, and we went to his apartment in Stockholm. So we arrived in Stockholm on the 23rd of December to a cold spell. It was minus 12 degrees. And it went between minus 12 and minus 20 something. You have never seen two people so happy as when our green cool box chugged down the conveyor belt off the aircraft. And because that had our Christmas in it, all of our Christmas dinner. But what was incredible was, even though it was minus 12 degrees and there was snow all over the place, we managed to get on a bus from the airport and go into Stockholm, didn't we? Like, the buses worked. I was thinking, this is amazing. Like, we have sleet in England and we can't get a bus. But it was minus 12 degrees. It was snowing. The snow plows had been out and they'd already been there. And it was cold. It was so cold that I could willingly have never taken my thermals off for the entire trip. So we survived in the cold by what my darling Kindersley guide told us to do. Oh, gosh, we're drinking again. We drank schnapps, quite a lot of it. It's harder core than the sherry. So after drinking said schnapps, we walked up to a church on a hill. And it's a thing I like to do. It's my Catholicism from youth. I light a candle in foreign churches. So we're walking out of the church, and a tramp comes up, and we wish him Merry Christmas. Graham's now grimacing. And he motions me to give him a hug. And I'm like, well, you know, it's Christmas. I'm going to hug a tramp. And let's just say it wasn't the greatest hug of my life. And there was a noise, wasn't there, Gray? And it went something like this. And it didn't come from me. I don't think he'd been hugged in a while. So Gray made his excuses for us, and we left. And the next day we went across the, I can't say this word, archipelago? Is that archipelago? What on earth is it? Collection of islands surrounded by, thank you, Tom, surrounded by sea. So we go across the sea, or we want to go across to Gamlestaden, which is like this old-fashioned island. And it sounds easy enough. I'm supposed to have pictures for you now, but Hannah's not well. So you'll have to imagine an old-fashioned island surrounded by sea. So we get down to the dock, and we look, and there are people skating across the sea. And we're like, but we want to go over there. And the people, like, literally skating and skiing across the water. So we're like, we're not going to get to go. But we did, because in Sweden, they had something called an icebreaker, which is a boat. And you get yourselves on this icebreaker, and it literally breaks the ice and goes across the water. And again, we were surprised. Something worked in this really amazing terrain. It was incredible. And then we get to the island, and there are coffee shops with heat burners outside and beautiful rugs so you can keep warm. It was just incredible. And what I've come to appreciate is that the reason that everything worked in Sweden was because there are people who knew their city and they knew their patch, and there had been a huge investment into making it work. People have seen what the climate's like, what the environment's like, what surrounds them, and they didn't think, we cannot live here. They see the sea and the land and the cold, and they've thought, okay, what we need is a boat or blankets or a snowplow. And because they are all in, the visitors are attracted to the beauty of the place. It's an easy experience for us, and we feel comfortable. My dad's a bit of an all-in kind of guy as well. I used to mistake his non-phoning as thoughtlessness. And just really recently, I've realised that's not what it is at all. The reason my dad didn't call me on Christmas morning was because he's all in that moment. And that's great when you're with him, but it is a bit of a getting used to point if you're not. My dad is so busy focusing on having a nice time where he's at and having a conversation with someone or just sitting and being with them that he's not focusing on missing out elsewhere. At Christmas, my dad wasn't spending time with me, but he was spending it with people he enjoys spending time with. He was mindfully in the moment. He was invested. I could learn a lot from my dad. And that's what Jesus is saying to his disciples in the scripture. He said, whatever town or village you enter, stay. Search for some worthy person and stay at their house until you leave. Stay. It's like wherever you are, be all there. I'm going to refer to this a couple of times. It's a book by Ken Koster. It's called Know Your Why, Finding and Fulfilling Your Calling in Life. And I'd really recommend it. He said that just after he'd left Cambridge University, he was walking through the city of London and not really knowing whether he should stay here and kind of going, why am I here, Lord? He said, but then clearly and suddenly, as dolphin breaking through the surface of the sea, Luke 24:49 burst into his head. Stay in the city until you've been clothed with the power from on high. It came from nowhere, and I knew instantly it was a word from God. And Ken is now chairman of Alpha International. As long as his business life, he's a professor of commerce at Gresham College in London, and he's also dean of Leadership College in London. There's a foreword in his book written by Rick Warren, who Ken met when they were both in Davos. So he respected and listened to what Jesus said to him. He said, stay where you are and I'll use you. And that's what Jesus is saying to his disciples. Stay at your house, stay at the house of the worthy person until you leave. So why does he say it? Well, the disciples were the first-hand witnesses of Jesus. And in being a disciple, Henri Nguyen says, you need to be disciplined. He explains it in a really profoundly simple way. He had an interview with a premier Christian magazine, I think, or there was an interview in it about what he said. And he said that the discipline of Jesus was in three parts, in solitude, in community, and in ministry. He said in solitude, he went away. You see it throughout the Gospels. He went away and prayed to the Father. In community, he surrounded himself by his disciples. He invested in them. And then we see his ministry when Jesus went out and then moved on, going back to his hometown of Nazareth. When Jesus tells his disciples to stay, he's saying, follow my example. He's showing that there should be place for prayer, for solitude. There'll be a place for community and therefore a building ground in order that the disciples can go out and do ministry. And we can see the danger, can't we, if we miss one part of this out. Without a community, ministry would be a fast road to burnout. Without ministry, our community, we're just self-serving. And without prayer, well, we're all at sea. Our home group has been in action for a few years now, and we're in a really great place emotionally, like with each other. But over the last year, getting together has been really hit and miss. And Dee, our lovely leader, put an email out to say, you know, what are we going to do? We're going to continue? Last Thursday, there was a packed room. We were in. We were all in. And that's the question I want us all to be answering as individuals and as a church today. Do we truly want to be all in disciples of Jesus? Are we ready to invest in all the areas that we're called to, in the solitude, in ourselves? Investing in your personal growth is not a selfish thing to do. Speak to Em about growth mindset. Today is the last day you will know as little as you do, because tomorrow we hope to know more. That is not a selfish thing to do. We need to invest. And that's the place we want to be as a disciple as Jesus. We want to be thirsty to know about him and to be in relationship with him. Are we ready to be disciplined? A disciplined disciple in learning, in prayer, in our quiet time, in our learning. I personally remember feeling absolutely gutted when a few of our big speakers left our church as they followed their calling into ministry. I remember when Rich Thomas left and Steve Brody left. And I was like this toddler stamping on the floor, like, I can't believe they're going. I was absolutely gutted. I came to realise, I'm actually totally bigging myself up. It was Em and Han who told me that I wanted to continue to be fed by them. And I remember Em very clearly at one point said, well, we just have to take responsibility for it for ourselves, don't we, sometimes? And I just thought, you've got to be kidding me. I was enjoying being fed. I was a consumer of their investment. And I was absolutely loving it. I didn't want the thought that I had to do any of that myself. I was this newborn Christian being spoon-fed, and I have my mouth like that. What do you mean I'm going to have to pick up my own spoon? What do you mean? Some of it is me, and some of it is the preacher. But we can be like that, can't we? We can fed like babies. And I needed that as a newborn Christian. But as I grew into a toddler, I realised, and Em and Han told me, that I had to learn to feed myself. So are we ready to be a disciplined disciple in our community, committing to regular church and home group attendance? I don't know about you, but when I first started coming to St. Matt's, it felt like I'd come home, because we're all family, aren't we? And we all have our strengths, and we're not all eyes or ears. We're not all hosts or speakers, but we are all cogs. We can all have a role, and there are wonderful people here at St. Matt's who explore where your giftings can lie and how they can be tapped into. So please don't feel like you don't have a place. At that point, actually, I'm just going to bring that psalm in, because Mary was reading Psalm 71 this morning outside. And I was like, gosh, I've just read that. Where have I just read it? And It's beautiful. It says, even when I'm old and grey, do not forsake me, my God, till I declare your power to the next generation, your mighty acts to all who are to come. And so I just really pray that over us. If you feel like you don't know what place you are, you don't know what cog you are, and you think, you know, I can't do anything, pass on everything you've got to the people in front of you and stay until you've done it. In Ken's book, he says of his lovely wife, who's a beautiful pianist, he said that's her gift. And he said another of her gifts is that she's got a heart for old people. So he invited a few of her neighbours, her elderly neighbours, to afternoon tea at their house. And when they were there, she played the piano, and it was so well received that she decided to extend the ministry. So now in Onslow Square in South Kensington, 6 times a year, 300 to 400 people gather within the church for a free concert by professional musicians who all give their time for free. Ken's wife knew her environment. She used the gifts that God had given her to make a difference. And it's from that place of belonging that we also know the strength that we have, where we're able to shake the dust off the feet, dust off our feet, as we grow to know who we are in Jesus and take our place in the family of Christ. And I just want to make a point here. We've been surrounded by quite a lot of dust over the last 6 months, having some building work done. And what I've come to realize is when you're on your own, you can wipe the dust off your feet. You can see it. Sometimes we don't actually know how dusty we've got. And because the dust, we kind of only see the dust when it settles, but it's there all the time. The dust of the world is there all the time. And last week or the week before, we were having lunch, and Tom and Sarah Tyler were with us, and was lovely, Lizzie Ramp. And we've got this room full of boxes, and Alex went to get something in the room, and he came back, and half of him was like in his normal clothes, and half looked like he'd gone back in time and stayed there for about 100 years. It was like white, but he didn't know. And Tom Tyler goes, Alex, you're dusty. And he goes, what? And he goes, no, I mean, like, you're really dusty. And with that, Tom and everyone started brushing the dust off Alex. And that's what being community is sometimes you don't realize how much stuff of the world we've gathered, and it needs the community to wipe us down. I used to have a wonderful acupuncturist who said to me, when you get home from work, take your shoes off at the door and leave your day in them. Take your shoes off at your door and leave your day in them. And we can do the same at the foot of Jesus' cross, can't we? We can leave our shoes and all of our day in them with all of our cares. There's a great sculpture called Shoe Christ. If you Google it, Shoe Christ by Peter Motika. Oh, I have no idea. It's displayed in Prague. If you search Shoe Christ Statue Prague, you'll see it's a sculpture of Christ on the cross, but made out of all old shoes. And so it's a good reminder that we can leave our shoes with Jesus. Community is good for us. It's also good for our children. In the social media world they live in a place of needing to belong with others. And yet at church they know that they're a beloved child of Christ, a place of love and compassion and forgiveness. Dedo last week reminded us of the early Christians and how they shared everything. And then Matthew 10 that we've just read, it says, you know, what we must do in order to, you know, be disciples. And then if we go into Acts 2 from where what Dedo was referring us to last week, we look about the fellowship of believers, and it says they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to the fellowship, to the breaking of bread and to prayer. Everyone was filled with awe, and many wonders and miraculous signs were done by the apostles. All the believers were together and had everything in common, selling their possessions and goods. They gave to anyone as he had need. Every day they continued to meet together in temple courts. They broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of all the people. And the Lord added to their numbers daily of those who were saved. It's just so powerful. Jesus says, do this, and that happens. it was the disciples' acts I've spoken about before that brought me to faith. Whilst I love Jesus, like properly love Jesus, his life for me was kind of hard to believe. And I don't know if anyone else is in that place. The miracles were so extraordinary, so human yet out of this world. But I looked to his friends and thought, if they would die for him, then he must be true. And that's the incredible challenge for us, isn't it? If we are judged by our witness, how do we fare? I don't know why I've chosen all these random, hard names. Dietrich Bonhoeffer. Linda would be able to read that out much better. He's a German theologian, and he says, our life as a Christian should make non-believers question their disbelief in God. Our life as a Christian should make non-believers question their disbelief in God. And so, if we have all of the stuff we need in place, our discipline in solitude, our discipline in community, then we as individuals, as families, as church, we can go on and be disciplined in our mission. And like the icebreaker ships that go across the frozen sea in Stockholm, we can be effective. We can take people with us. We can bring people to Jesus. Being all in. And it isn't always easy. It isn't comfortable. We might have a bit of a... like my tramp in Sweden. And just this week, I just felt God calling me to do something a little bit brave. I was sat before my eye test having a coffee in Patisserie Valerie. I get them free with Barclays. Other banks are available. I sat in the window and I decided to have my quiet time there, just sat in the window. And as I was looking across over at the library, my friend, a librarian, came into my mind and I prayed for her. And she's an atheist. But that day, and she doesn't like people talking about faith, really. But that day, I just really felt God saying, you need to tell her that you're praying for her. And I was like, I don't think so, Jesus. And he's like, you need to tell her that you're praying for her. So I was like, oh, Lord, this is going to go down like a wet fish. So I did. So I sent her a text and I just said, hi, just letting you know that you're in my thoughts and in my prayers this morning. And she sent me a text straight back. And she said, I really needed to know that today. I really needed to know that someone had my back. Because I've had to start going to counselling. And I'm feeling so alone. And I just couldn't believe it. And I just thought, Lord, you knew that she needed that. And I didn't know that. And if it was down to me, I would never have sent that text. But I just really felt God prompting me. And a few days later, we met up. And she said, you will keep praying for me, won't you? I need someone on my side. And so it isn't always comfortable doing God's work, and we'll often feel like a sheep amongst the wolves, but it is always worth it. And so I'm just going to ask you today, if you want to be all in for Jesus, I just want you to come forward, and there will be people who will pray for you. Because we're either all in or either all out. And so I just lay that over you today and just ask you to come forward. Amen.